Oh, welcome to your Thursday, and hope you've had a good week thus far, and a good weekend coming up. Lots of things going on in town. We'll talk about that a little bit later on here on WFSU-FM. But thank you so much for tuning into Perspectives this morning, because that's what we're going to be doing for the next hour. And you are always welcome to be part of the conversation locally. The number, 414-1234. It's 800-926-8809. If long distance twixt you and us, Perspectives at WFSU.org, the email, or you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. Man, you know, we are now into this hyper-politicized season, and there seem to be so few matters on which people can find common ground, and you hear politicians jockeying for that. What are the things that can bind us all together? But here's something I was thinking about that does impact everyone, regardless of your political party or your religion or income level or even age, and that is the salient point. We are all getting older, and that fact alone should be enough to kind of connect us closer, because those aging-related issues that impact me are also going to impact you, and vice versa. And of course, America is getting older as a country. Florida has long been a haven for older folks. And even here in Tallahassee, which has been going back and forth twixt us and Gainesville as the youngest communities in Florida, is now seeing an increase in our median age. And there is, in fact, a very targeted effort to bring more retirees to our community, which will further advance that demographic. So, like we said at the outset, everyone's doing it. We're getting older. So what a great thing to talk about here. We have some terrific folks to address some aging issues and how that impacts all of us today on Perspective. So let's go around the table from my right, your left. We say hi first to Dr. Alice Pomador of the FSU College of Medicine, professor, family practice, geriatrician, knowledgeable about older adult driving and physical activity and health literacy and fall prevention. And Alice, can you help me from falling over? I took a nasty spill the other day. Can you help me in that regard?
Well, sure. I'm certain there's all kinds of things we can do to help you with that. The biggest would be for you to be doing physical activity.
That will really help.
That will really help. That would really help all of us with almost everything.
I think you are on to something, and we're going to talk some more about that as we go through. Thanks for coming in, Alice. Appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here.
Right next door to you, we have Walter Wally Boot, also from FSU. This in the College of Arts and Sciences, though, associate professor, Department of Psychology, part of the advisory group for FSU's Institute for Successful Longevity. And I love that term. That is so great. Welcome first, Wally. What exactly is the Institute?
Well, the Institute is a group of people at Florida State University who all have a common goal of helping older adults maintain well-being, helping them maintain cognition, and also independence, coming at it from a variety of different angles, from nutrition to exercise to perhaps some kind of cognitive intervention, all with the goal of coming together and helping older adults.
Boy, that's going to be a lot of fodder for discussion here as we go throughout the day. So thank you for coming in, too. And we wrap up here over on this side of the room with also from the FSU College of Medicine, Suzanne Baker, director of the Department of Geriatrics Research, responsible for overseeing all department research projects. A ton of stuff you guys are working on.
We are working on a lot of things. Yes, absolutely.
Wow, thank you for coming in. Well, let's get a few facts and figures here. We had said at the outset, we are in an aging, not only community, but a country and everything else. How fast are we aging in comparison to maybe what we were doing 25, 30, 40 years ago?
Well, the baby boomer bubble has now been hitting the older age group for about the past 5 to 10 years. And as we know, it's sort of like the egg that moves through the boa constrictor. You can just see this bulge moving through the age groups. And now people like Paul McCartney and Jane Fonda and many celebrities are in their 70s. And so that group really drives what's going on in Tallahassee and in Florida We expect to see one out of every four people being over the age of 65 by 2020.
Boy, and that has so many ramifications, whether it's the provision of health care, so many more folks moving now into the, you could say, the Medicare bubble. We have one of those that we're dealing with now, and the greater propensity of folks to have age-related health concerns and what that means as far as public policy and all that. This is huge.
It's going to affect pretty much every kind of infrastructure that we have, transportation, health care, housing, nutrition. Everything you can imagine that we all take for granted as operating well, or perhaps maybe you don't think it's going to operate well, but well for the most part, especially in Tallahassee, is going to have to expand tremendously, or we're going to have to support older adults with being able to manage all of these things on their own for longer periods of time.
Yeah, especially in a place like Florida where you have so many family units that kind of fragmented. The original family may be in Michigan or Ohio or someplace, and yet folks have relocated down here and they don't have the same kind of family support structures that you would have back in that area.
We certainly do not. And not only may that be permanent, but that's also true for a substantial portion of our snowbirds, where we may have a huge proportion that come down here for 3 or 6 months, but then leave again. And so learning how to support a transient population and account for those in the costs of our and manpower needs for our infrastructure is a whole nother ball of wax.
Yeah, a long consideration for folks, particularly in Central and South Florida, but now we're seeing a lot of that here too. So
it is. In Central Florida, we expect by 2030 to have at least 6 or 7 counties that are over 50% older adults, which is going to be, again, another issue. We saw some of those issues being of concern, for example, when we've had hurricanes strike us and we've had to do disaster planning for mobilization and support of a group that may not be as mobile and as flexible with those things. And here in Tallahassee, there are currently plans filed for 10 new senior living projects going on in our county area.
I saw that. Yeah, the growth management people down there in Frenchtown in the Renaissance building, they have a bunch of those coming up for consideration. So, well, Wally Boot, what do we do about quality of living, though? It's one thing to age, but aging well, which is one of the bailiwicks that you and the folks at the Institute are, how do we stay kind of younger longer, mm-hmm. if you will?
Yeah, my expertise is in cognitive psychology, and we know that there are a variety of changes that happen to the cognitive system. Cognition declines with age. Perceptual abilities decline with age. And I think one thing that we need to think about is how to design for older adults so that they can take advantage of the perhaps technology that younger adults take advantage of that help support them, that help them maintain their well-being. So part of the focus of our center, our CREATE Center, which is the Center for Research and Education on Aging and Technology Enhancement, is thinking about how to design technology for older adults to help them maintain independence and maintain well-being. So that's one of the focus of our center. And also thinking about maintaining cognition in a number of ways so that we know that these cognitive declines are associated with a difficulty doing the important tasks that we need to do to live independently. So if your cognition declines, you have difficulty banking, you have difficulty driving, you have difficulty doing a number of things. One thing that we think about is how do we help older adults maintain their cognition to be as independent as possible? This is actually a fairly controversial topic. There are a lot of products that people sell that claim to improve cognition, that may, if you do these cognitive exercises or video games, can help reverse age-related cognitive decline. That's a very controversial topic, and I think at least in that respect, the evidence isn't there that these products work.
Yeah, but it's certainly a market for it, though. The great terror of, oh, my God, you know, what happens if I get Alzheimer's? That now has become – it used to be cancer. You know, oh, my God, cancer. That's going to kill us all. But now Alzheimer's seems to be even worse because it just steals a little bit of you away day by day. And you can see loved ones just disappear literally before your eyes over a period of months or years.
Right. I mean, this is a concern that a lot of people have. It's a billion-dollar industry at this point. It's projected to be a $3 billion industry by 2020, this cognitive training type of intervention or these types of products. This has been in the news. Lumosity recently was fined $2 million for deceptive advertisement. So there is a lot of debate in the scientific community regarding whether these products work. And I think there have been consensus statements released that are actually conflicting. So the Stanford Longevity Center released a consensus statement signed by 70 people, really smart scientists, really respected scientists, suggesting that really, we don't know enough about these brain training products to suggest that they work. People shouldn't be buying them. And really what we've learned in terms of cognitive psychology over the last 100 years, these products are probably not likely to work. There was a consensus statement then released a couple of months later signed by 130 scientists and practitioners saying that's all wrong and that there are products on the market right now that we can expect to work. So there is a lot of debate. I'm more on the side of we really don't know yet. These products probably don't have or can't match the claims that are being made by these companies.
Well, even if the efficacy of those kinds of things are open to some debate and speculation, one thing we do know is that caregivers are a huge necessary part of any discussion along this line. So, Suzanne Baker, when it comes to that, having enough resources to help caregivers, that is a huge component of this too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're lucky that here in Tallahassee we have the Alzheimer's Project, Inc., who is really devoted to supporting caregivers who are caring for folks with Alzheimer's disease. And they have run a lot of great programs. And as you mentioned earlier, we currently have a study going on that's funded through the Department of Health through the Ed and Ethel Moore Disease Alzheimer's Disease Research Program that is aimed at caregivers. And so the Alzheimer's Project, Inc., along with Westminster Communities, who is owns Westminster Oaks and Westminster Gardens here locally, and they're going to be offering a six-week program for caregivers that's designed really to help caregivers take care of themselves. We know that caregivers suffer from additional health risks and other things through their caregiving. And so this is for people who are caring for individuals. These are for lay people, not professional caregivers, but those who are lay people taking care of family. And we can talk a little bit more about that, too.
Absolutely, on the other side of the break, because you got to take care of the caregivers. Otherwise, they can't give care, right? Talking about aging issues today on Perspectives with a terrific panel, Alice Pomador, Suzanne Baker, and Wally Boot, all from Florida State University. And your calls and emails, too, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Hey, we are back on Perspectives, and let's face it, when you were 22, all right? And I'm only projecting here because I remember vaguely when I was that age. And we kept thinking to ourselves, oh, 60 or 70, certainly 80, incomprehensible. You know, we were never going to make it that far. We were going to live hard and die young, right? Didn't work out that way. Did it. So we have, as a consequence, some other things to think about as we get into that part of our existence. And that's what our panel is here to help us suss out today on Perspectives as we talk about aging issues and, of course, taking your calls, too. But before we do that, back to Suzanne Baker. Let's talk about that caregiver seminar that's okay. coming up, because that is so critical for anybody who has an older person in their life or themselves are older and they're thinking, gee, I could use some help.
Right, exactly. And I think there's a lot of caregivers out there who could use additional supports. And so this is a program. It's called Powerful Tools for Caregivers, and it is an evidence-based program. And it's designed to help caregivers learn to have better self-care capacity. So they work on issues of, you know, effectively communicating with the person that you're caring for, managing stress, managing physical activity, setting goals, dealing with, you know, difficult behaviors, things like that. And so it's a program that's designed here locally. It'll be offered in it's a six-week program once a week for 90 minutes. It's being offered by, as I mentioned before, the Alzheimer's Project, Inc. of Tallahassee, as well as Westminster Communities. And so the department has a grant through the Department of Health, whose principal investigator is Antonio Antonio Terracciano, and he is doing an evaluation of the Powerful Tools for Caregivers program as it pertains to those who are caring for folks with dementia or Alzheimer's disease. And so if you're interested in the research, you can contact our department. We are currently recruiting in the Tallahassee area as well as Orlando, and you can call 645-2993. Again, that's 645-2993, and speak with Lemitra Smallwood, who is our research assistant for this project. And she is taking names, and she can either sign you up for the research as well as give your information to one of the organizations who's providing the workshop here in town. And she can get you more information about that, and then they will let you know when we're having the workshops and what the parameters of participating in the research would be.
That's terrific, and you can help push the envelope of what is appropriate and what works in this regard.
Exactly. And and we're also advertising in the Tallahassee Democrat and Active Living, which is coming out later this month. So you may see ads for this research as well.
Super. Well, let's get to the phones here. Reed's been hanging on line one. Hey, Reed, how's it going?
Hey, Tom, how you doing this morning?
Could not be doing better. I've been catching some of your Facebook commentary now. You just ramp it down there, sir.
Well, you know, that's become my blog. But, of course, that's because I'm getting old, Tom, and I can't move around like I used to. I'm finding myself on the computer a lot.
Well, at least you're keeping up with modern technology, Reed. That's the most important thing.
I'm trying my best. I'm still learning, but I'm trying my best. Hey, in regard to the Alzheimer's Project, I am fortunate to be a lifetime parrot head. And the Parrot Head Club of Tallahassee has been instrumental, I think, in bringing awareness to the needs of caregivers in this regard. And every year they throw the Parrot Head Frenzy, which is a fundraiser for the Alzheimer's Project. And it is a focus primarily on the importance of taking care of the caregivers. This issue has touched me personally. I have lost two family members to Alzheimer's, but in both cases, their primary caregiver died before they did. It is a difficult, difficult task. And I think the more we can bring, more emphasis we can bring to bear on that, the more resources we can bring to bear on that, the better we'll all be.
Boy, that is something that I think I see nods of affirmation all around the table, Reed. I really do. And that's got to be the most tragic thing in the world when you have someone who's caring for you and they do not survive you.
Exactly.
Well, when's the next Frenzy coming up?
You know what? I do not know.
Okay.
But actually, somebody on your panel probably does.
Well, we will find out.
I encourage anybody who wants to get involved in things like this to go party with a purpose, which is the motto of the Parrot Head. And you know, it's an organization of you know, Jimmy Buffett and music fans in general who just love to get together, have a good time, and do something for the community.
Well, we will find out more, and we will get that out then, Reed.
Doesn't get any better than that.
It sure don't. Son, thank you so much for checking in. I appreciate it, Reed.
Sure.
Okay, take care. That is, I think, another thing that we are very blessed here in Tallahassee to have groups like, whether the Parrot Heads, the Alzheimer's Project, the various other resources that are available, and also Florida State University with the College of Medicine and Arts and Sciences and all bringing just so much to bear on this. Alice, as far as some of the other considerations, we were talking about this out in the lobby before we came in here, when it gets into things like mobility, that also is a great fear on the part of folks as they look forward to, we hope, more years of independence. What happens when I can't drive anymore?
Well, that's a tremendous concern because in the United States in particular, being able to drive, coming of age, getting your car are just such signs of independence and being an adult. And almost everyone can remember when they first drove their first car. So having that is a tremendous symbol of independence. And in this country, people are not well adapted to using other forms of transportation or even for planning to use other forms of transportation. And truthfully, also in this country, there isn't very good alternative transportation which has been set up. So if people think, what should I do when I can no longer drive? Often the answer is, well, I just won't tell anybody. I'll just keep driving. Or I'll find something else which maybe I can manage but which is far less crash-worthy, such as a golf cart or an other vehicle. And there are some communities that are set up to be entirely golf cart independent here in this state. And us in Arizona, we have some unique issues with that. So the Safe Mobility for Life Coalition of Florida is an umbrella organization of 27 different groups that includes AARP. It includes three of the universities. It includes law enforcement, Florida Department of Transportation. And they are in working in collaboration with the Pepper Center here. I am one of their members. And we are trying to encourage people to begin what would be considered transitioning from driving or retirement planning. Just as you would plan for your retirement, you need to plan for when you're going to retire from driving. For an older adult with dementia, for example, usually people will be unsafe to continue driving about 2 years after the diagnosis. But all of us may have issues with driving for several reasons without any problems with dementia, if we have trouble with our vision, with arthritis. And there are lots of things that can be done to help prolong our driving life expectancy. Ideally, we'd like people to be able to get around and to drive for as long as they live so that people don't have to worry about that fear of loss of independence. But if there's interventions that can't be done to prevent that loss of skills, then we want to help people plan so that they can stay independent. The Safe Mobility for Life has a terrific website, which is www.flsams.org, and it has answers to virtually every single question you can think of, including a Find a Ride section where you can just click on it, click on your county, click on what kind of transportation you want, and it will give you the names, addresses, phone numbers of what's available in your area so you can get around.
I know we have here in Leon County Dial-A-Ride. In fact, I was with the doctors just yesterday, and Dial-A-Ride van pulled up, and a guy came whizzing out in his wheelchair and went in to take care of his doctor's appointment. Then another one pulled up, and he was in that and gone. I thought, boy, that's really – we're lucky in that regard. But still, most communities, I think, while they could use a – maybe an infusion of additional options when it comes to public transportation or a more comprehensive transportation policy that takes this switch into account, right?
Right. I think that that's definitely the case. I mean, we don't want driving cessation to lead to a really social isolation of that individual. We don't want someone to give up driving and then they no longer go out. They no longer interact with people. We know that social isolation has negative impacts on mental health, physical health. It's just a really bad situation for people who are no longer able to drive and then they have no other options. So there are a variety of other ways that we can really encourage public transportation, things like even technology-related things like Uber, maybe options, autonomous vehicles and semi-autonomous vehicles, and maybe the not-too-distant future may start to address this problem as well, so that if someone has perceptual and cognitive abilities that are declining, can we offload some of those driving tasks to the vehicle itself? In this way, those issues aren't really a problem. But then that raises all sorts of other issues as well in terms of now you have people interacting with the new technology and what happens when the technology fails, what happens when the automation fails. Are younger and older adults able to take over the control of the vehicle appropriately when needed?
Yeah, I remember the challenges when I was trying to teach my dad how to use email.
Right.
That was, you know, he was another greatest generation kind of guy, and he could write a letter like nobody's business, but he just could not quite grasp the whole concept of email and escaped him. Let's say hey to George. He's been hanging on the line patiently on line two. Hi, George.
Hi, Tom. You know, I'm not but a little over 3.5 months away from getting out of here. But, you know, Walter was talking about these products that they are coming out with or that they're talking about that are supposed to be doing this and that, it amazes me that some of these companies, and I'm sure you guys have heard them, that advertise these glucose meters that they want you to get simply because they say that you don't have to prick your finger.
Yeah, I keep wondering how that works. I mean, there's got to be some way of, you know, extracting the blood sample, but how do you do that without, you know, going in and getting it?
I know that they do have, I have one, a Lancet device that you can use on areas other than your finger. I don't know how to use it. I have to get somebody to instruct me how to do it, but it just amazes me that they... One of their catch things is that they tell people that if you get this meter, you don't have to prick your finger.
Okay. Well, you can't believe everything you hear. That's right.
I've never seen a meter where you don't have to prick something.
Well, yeah. Well, between that and the painless catheter, I don't know. But we're not going to go there, Georgia.
Gotcha.
Good to hear from you. In 3 more months, we'll catch you on the flip side of retirement there, okay?
August 31st.
Okay. Look forward to it.
All right.
Take care now. But that brings up another point, too, that the technology, as you were saying, Wally, which is advancing here, but may still lag in some areas, particularly when it comes to the way that we design mm-hmm. our houses, our apartments, those sorts of things. Just staying at a very, very nice condominium on vacation here this past week, my wife was saying, my gosh, well, here – and in the toilet facilities, there's nothing to grab onto. Mm-hmm. And she has a little bit of an age-related mobility challenge. She's going, can you help me out? I'm going, honey, is this even, you know, should this even be a thing? Should we now be designing our houses, our other living facilities, to accommodate an aging population? What do you think, Suzanne?
Well, I think probably Dr. Pomodoro could speak to this even better than I could. But I think that we know that that folks are having issues, and we know that a lot of some of these aging issues and we can prevent falls. We know we have pretty good evidence about how to do some of those things, and it requires modifications, as you mentioned. And the modifications may not always be something that everybody wants to do, or some of them may be embarrassing for some folks. But we know that they can be helpful, and so I do think that we need to start thinking about. You know, our living space, that's where we spend most of our time, and we obviously want it to be someplace that's safe. So,
yeah, we have an advocate who comes in here a lot for the disabled, J.R. Harding, in case anyone knows J.R. over at the Department of Elder Affairs. But he's been part of an effort to try to get more contractors and architects on board for this sort of thing. That, you know, you're going to have to build for an older population eventually anyway. Why not do it from the get-go?
Well, one thing that tends to make a big difference in people's viewpoint is when suddenly this issue becomes real for their mother or for their father or for another relative. And in the course of assisting or hearing about that, they realize how aging unfriendly much of our current design products are. Part of that also has to do, frankly, because we tend to be in denial regarding aging in the United States. And tremendous effort is put into pretending that we're not getting older rather than to looking it in the face regarding aging as a privilege, since there's lots of us that don't get to, and honoring the fact that we have a generation of older adults that we should support and keep around to help us out with wisdom. So there are some design projects that do go forward in terms of planning these things in advance. Right now they're labeled as older adult communities. But if we were really intelligent, we would be designing everywhere that we live with those same standards in mind, so they would be universally accessible to younger people with disability as well as ourselves as we're getting older. Having said that, there are a few places in town that are in the business of retrofitting so that you can hire a contractor to come in, look at your space, retrofit it so that it is friendly for different kinds and levels of mobility, even if it's at wheelchair access level, so that you can do what we call aging in place. And that actually is another current state initiative of trying to establish what are considered aging-friendly communities And as you probably saw, that Tallahassee is being viewed as a pilot community for the dementia care-friendly communities. All of these issues of having supportive infrastructure and a willingness and an interest in supporting this population are part of what goes into making an older adult and dementia-friendly community.
And part of the education that this does not necessarily have to break anybody's bank. This can be built just into the regular cost of construction, of doing business, of whatever, and it just makes sense.
It certainly does. And in Florida, we have a tremendous number of businesses who do this extremely well, given our population. For example, when we were building our house after saving up, we made sure that everything was level, all the doors were wheelchair accessibly designed for width, and that there's places to put grab bars in our house everywhere we need to. And this turned out to be of tremendous benefit when my mother had to come live with us after her hip fracture surgery, and she needed a lot of those services and things in place. It was a simple matter of her being able to do that rather than having to go to a nursing home.
Thinking ahead, what a concept.
Well, I am in this business of geriatrics, so one would hope so.
414-1234, the number to call for perspectives as we address aging issues on today's program with Dr. Alice Pomador and Suzanne Baker, both from the College of Medicine at FSU, and Wally Boo from the College of Arts and Sciences, also at Florida State University. Your calls and emails coming up right after this short timeout. Back on Perspectives, and a reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to that URL, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and then click Perspectives, because we archive past shows, trying to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs, certainly by the close of business today, depending on how busy Trish and those guys get right there. Let's head to the phones. Amy has been patiently awaiting. How you doing, Amy?
Great, and I really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
This is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart because we have several older relatives in our family. My first question was, my mother and my grandmother, who's 98, live in Jacksonville, Florida, and they benefit greatly from having visiting physicians. And I wondered if that's available in Tallahassee. And I had a second question, if that's okay.
Sure.
My father had dementia, and he benefited greatly from being in a very different kind of facility. He was in a facility called Annam Park, and it consisted of single homes that were converted to be dementia-friendly, and they had a 5-to-1 ratio of caregivers, and it was in a home setting, so it was much easier for him to make that transition, and there was a lot better supervision and assistance. And I wondered if we have anything like that in Tallahassee.
We'll go around the table and find out, Amy. Thank you for both questions there. Well, what do you think, guys?
The Visiting Physicians is a national organization similarly to the original home health organization that was Visiting Nurses. There are chapters mostly in major metropolitan areas, and they serve a younger as well as an older population. To my knowledge, there is not actually a chapter in the Tallahassee area. There are still a few physicians who still make house calls, but they tend to be few and far between. a rising branch of medicine that is addressing this area is what's called concierge medicine, where people bypass the typical insurance products, and these are a personal contract that people have with physicians. There are a few people who are doing that in this area, but I do not know right now as to what the availability would be or what the arrangements would be for those folks.
Okay, and if anyone in the medical community is listening right now, and you guys got some insight on this, please give us a ring at 414-1234. What about the intensive facilities that are set up for dementia and Alzheimer's? Do we have anything like that in this area, Alice, that you're aware of? Or?
Not of the type that has been described by the caller. Almost every institution will have what they describe as a separate section for memory impaired folks, but the types of services that are delivered, at least in this area, tend to be far more institutional than what she is describing. It will be a unit that's usually separately designed so that there's environmental cues to help people with memory disorders function, and usually have increased staffing and different types of enrichment programs for activities that are geared particularly at people with dementia or with memory problems. So there are several of those facilities here at both the assisted living and at the nursing facility level. But the separate independently functioning communities, like she's describing with the small house arrangements, are not in place right now in the Tallahassee area.
Okay. As a quick aside, it would seem that the recent saga of Glenn Campbell and the amount of publicity that has gotten, not just in this country but around the world, has certainly raised the visibility of this issue and given a lot of folks perhaps a lot deeper insights than they otherwise would have had as to what happens to someone when they're in the throes of Alzheimer's.
It certainly has, and I think if anybody has seen the movie, it certainly highlights not only the benefits that he had from being able to remain in a supportive home environment, but also how his family benefited from being able to be close to him. With that having said that, he had many more resources available to him than most people do. And those kinds of resources, truthfully, it's cheaper to take care of someone at home than to try to put someone in a separate facility. And that's part of the reason that the caregiver support organizations like the Alzheimer's Project and the Powerful Tools Training are so very important. They save the state and the nation billions of dollars, literally, in providing care and keeping people from being institutionalized. So being able to maintain someone at home, if you have the resources and if you have caregivers who are able to perform that task for their loved ones, that's a tremendous savings and a tremendous benefit to everyone concerned.
Suzanne Baker, talk a little bit about the North and Central Florida Geriatrics Workforce Enhanced Partnership that we didn't have a chance to get into that yet.
Yeah, that's it's a partnership. It's funded through HRSA, which is Health Services and Health Resources and Services Administration, and it was the principal investigator is Dr. Paul Katz, who's the chair of our geriatrics department, and it's a project that is aimed at not only helping train caregivers and providers, both professional and as well as lay caregivers, but it also has – the project we have is unique in that it's very collaborative. We partnered with the FSU College of Nursing, the FSU College of Social Work. We have six different projects within this grant. One of them is for the Powerful Tools for Caregivers program. So we're helping support the Alzheimer's Project and being able to, in Westminster Communities, and be able to offer this across the state, hopefully by the end of the 3 years. And it's funded after the idea that we know that we're going to have a workforce, a healthcare professionals workforce, that is going to need to care for more older adults. And there's training needed in, you know, from physical therapists to occupational therapists to physicians, nurses, social workers, et cetera, that are all going to need to have more geriatrics training. And so that the goal of this project overall is to help prepare those individuals and provide training programs that make them better providers for older adults.
You hit on something that, a little personal aside, mm-hmm. Just a couple weeks ago had a slight mishap while I was trying to do what you said, Alice, is to get out there and be active, and I started a regular walking regimen. for the first time.
Good for you.
All right. Oh, this is good. I got more energy, and it's wonderful. And then I hit a patch of leaves over top of some mud. It came down. Boom. And had to go in to see the doctor. And she says, well, before we do anything, why don't you check with a physical therapist, which was a nice referral. The guy checked me out. He says, oh, it's not the tendons and it's not the muscle. Little hip thing there. But try this exercise, and gave me a very simple thing to do. It was most remarkable, near miraculous recovery. At least it felt a heck of a lot better. And he said, okay, now, had you gone through some of the standard medical stuff, and you're over 60, right? I said, yeah. He says, it is very likely that another doctor might have said, well, after the x-ray and the MRI, we will have to do some maybe hip replacement because there's some deterioration there. He says, you don't need a hip replacement. You keep doing this sort of thing, and we will get as much mileage out of that hip as we possibly can. Does that happen, though? Where you have some of the medical community just automatically saying, well, we can fix this, but escalating it maybe to a larger degree than they have to?
Well, the issue there is that people do what they are trained to do and what they know how to do. And very little attention is given in medical curricula in general to lifestyle modification, to nutrition and exercise, and to conservative therapy, because people are trained to use medications to do surgery, etc. So the joke goes, if you want to have surgery, then go see a surgeon. But if you don't, then don't go see the surgeon, because that's what people are there to offer you, the skills that they have. And so what level of recommendation you will get will depend a great deal on how the person that you are seeing has been trained and what they know and what they're comfortable with.
Okay. Wally Boot, just to 30,000-foot overview. Things getting better? Are these sorts of awarenesses now becoming more prevalent than they were, that, gee, we do have to make accommodations for an aging population, and maybe we don't have to go full tilt boogie to try to fix everything because aging is a normal part of life?
I think, I mean, as the aging population grows, I think that perspective is probably growing as well. As more people age, they realize that perceptual and cognitive abilities might not be the same as they used to be. And now I'm the older adult having I used to design these products, and now I'm the older adult having frustration using this product. So I think that the awareness of designing for older adults is definitely increasing. There are a lot of human factors researchers who are specializing in human factors for older adults. How to design this product for older adults so that they can get the same benefit compared to younger adults. There's still this large digital divide. Still about 40% of individuals in the United States 65 years of age or older are not online. Even though there are tools online that would likely help them, that would likely be beneficial to them. And there are a variety of reasons we can talk about that why people may not be online. But when we design websites, when we design computers, when we design technology for older adults, we help them access resources that would help them in terms of well-being, in terms of being able to find resources that would help them remain independent. So, I think the awareness is increasing, and I think people are more conscious of this.
Still, we have an awful lot of coders and developers that are 20-somethings, and they may,
right,
you know, not be thinking in these terms. How would grandma use this?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, grandma may get the most benefit from that piece of technology. So, you're right that we have young people often designing for young people. A new app comes out, and the developers may be a 20-year-old, and it could be a device that, or an app that would be very beneficial for an older adult. So there are good guidelines. There are good books that you can look at that have step-by-step guidelines for how do you design for aging. And all those resources are out there. But still, I think some companies may not be thinking about these issues.
Okay. Well, you talked about the digital divide. Suzanne, is there still a generational divide? I mean, ageism still exists, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely, I think. And I mean, I think ageism, and we, you know, when we train medical students, you know, we spend a lot of time in our curriculum here at FSU, spending time, especially during from the very first day that they get, they come into medical school and medical training, talking about, you know, aging, talking about perceptions, talking about bias. You know, ageism, like any other bias, is something that we all probably have sometimes a lack of awareness or that we may have those things. And so I know at FSU we really do spend quite a bit of time talking to our medical students about becoming more aware of those things and how do we treat older adults with respect. And we have specific programs that's part of their training. We do a senior mentor program where they actually get to work with an active older adult in our community. And we start that from day one. So we hope that we turn out medical students who have and future physicians who are going to have a more awareness and maybe a little less of that bias than maybe other places.
Yeah, and Alice Pomodoro, I loved what you said before, earlier in the show about, you know, tapping into the wisdom of folks who have been around for a couple, three, five, six, seven decades, and being able to leverage that into kind of the society as a whole. That, you know, yeah, youth and energy, it's wonderful stuff, but you need something to sometimes counterbalance that too, right?
Very much so. And in addition, let's not forget that this generation also controls a lot of the wealth in this country. And like most things that happen in this country where you follow the money, I expect that products are going to be designed to the available market. And this age cohort of the baby boomers has changed every market that they have moved through where people begin to design to meet the needs of that group. So I'm hopeful that even if people don't have a native awareness of the valuable resources that our older adults are and the wisdom they can offer, they'll at least be motivated to address their needs through their own survival of their own companies by designing for the biggest market that is currently out there.
And please remember, dear 25-year-old, that, you know, should you survive, you too will be here.
There is no question about that. Actually, I have children in that age group, in that business, and they have a grandmother that they are trying things out on, partly by virtue of my particular bias, but I believe it will serve them very well in the long run. And we ourselves need to also help our older adults become aware of their own biases. When my mother forgets something and wants to blame it on the fact that she's old, then I have to discuss with her that, no, actually, it's still your fault. You can't blame it on being old. And you need to work on that. So we're not going to get away with that one.
There you go. Well, I can think of no better advocate and maybe nemesis at the same time, Alice, than you. Oh, just a few minutes remaining in today's program. Let's just get a couple final thoughts. Here's Suzanne Baker.
Well, final thoughts. I don't know. I'll actually hand that one off to Dr. Boo.
So one final thought I want to leave people with is that we've talked about these products that improve cognition, these video games or digital games or brain training programs. I think if I were to make one recommendation for improving the health of your brain, improving your cognition, even late in life, physical exercise. There's such a large body of exercise or evidence right now that aerobic exercise is one of the best things you can do for your brain structure, brain function, and your cognition. So you don't need to pay for a subscription to one of these online cognitive training services. You can just walk three times a week and hopefully not fall as as we talked about before. But walking briskly maybe an hour three times a week would be a great recommendation for, of course, consulting with your physician first for improving your cognition, improving your – and there are a variety of other, of course, benefits related to exercise.
Yeah, you will feel better even if you don't fall down. But Suzanne, we're not going to let you go without, again, talking about powerful tools for caregivers.
Okay.
Let's get another plug in for that.
Yeah, okay. So if you're interested in participating in the research or you're interested in the program overall, you can contact us at 645-2993. You'll reach Lemitra Smallwood, and that's in our Department of FSU Geriatrics. And we can hook you up not only with this research opportunity, but also other opportunities that will be coming up in our department if you're interested in giving back through research.
Okay. And finally, Dr. Alice Pomodoro.
So I'd like to echo something for both people. One is that In terms of taking your oxygen first, which is the concept that you have on the planes, if you're going to help someone else and if you're going to remain a fit caregiver, you really do need to take care of yourself mm-hmm. and to find resources to help you do that. So I would encourage people to call the Alzheimer's Project if they are in that situation at 850-386-2778. Even if you're not going to be enrolling in the Powerful Tools program, they have a number of other programs that include respite counseling in home respite and the Project Lifesaver bracelets that can help caregivers. But among those things, physical activity, again, is the single most important thing you can do for any diagnosis of any kind. And doing it 10 minutes at a time, maybe three times in a day, is all you need to do more days than not. Just start with that 10 minutes and work your way up.
Dr. Alice Pompadour and Suzanne Baker, both from the College of Medicine at FSU, and Dr. Wally Booth from the College of Arts and Sciences, thanks for coming on Perspectives today. Really enjoyed it, guys. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls doing the technical stuff today, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll talk with folks who will soon be providing thousands of pounds of food to local kids who otherwise would go hungry this summer when school's out and the breakfast and lunch program isn't there. We'll talk more then on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.